Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists, ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 525.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who has been a guest on Therapy Chat previously, Dr. Vincentia Schroeder. Vincentia Schroeder, who goes by Vin, is an author, a longtime therapist, a trainer in bioenergetics, and a human who recently released her first memoir. And this memoir is about her experience with infertility and challenges conceiving, including baby loss, and how she found her way through that pain, what it meant for her, the identity challenges she faced, how she healed, including use of bioenergetics, and how her spiritual life was impacted. I find this to be a very hopeful conversation. And I think that so many of us, when we talk about infertility and baby loss, there's still a lot of stigma around this topic. And when we talk about it, we often talk about it very sadly or secretly. And there is grief and loss in that experience for sure. But there's kind of like a bigger picture to me in the meaning of parenthood. And for those of us who identify as women, whether or not you become a parent, whether by choice or not by choice, is something that society has a lot of thoughts about. And I feel that the conversation that we had is a really rich discussion that weaves together multiple layers. It's hard for me to even put into words kind of how I felt during this conversation. It was landing on a visceral level for me. I do want to mention that if you haven't realized yet, we are talking about infertility, loss, baby loss. And we also talked about the experience of an ectopic pregnancy and some of the medical crises that came about from that. So I wanted to give you a heads up about that because it can be very sensitive to listen to this. And if it touches you really deeply, please take care of yourself. There is a moment in our conversation when Vin is sharing about her crisis, and she noticed while we were talking that she was getting pulled into a trauma vortex, and she names that. And it makes sense in light of what we were discussing, but that may be difficult for some of you to hear. So I wanted to give you a heads up about that. With Mother's Day around the corner, I felt like this was a great conversation to touch into some of what's in our collective consciousness about mother. So thank you for listening and be back with you soon. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so happy to be back with Dr. Vincentia Schroeder. Vin, thank you so much for being my guest again on Therapy Chat today. I'm so happy to talk to you again.
I'm so happy to be here.
Yes. And today, so we've talked in the past, I think it was around 2023, about your work in bioenergetics, which is super cool. But today we're going to be talking about something different. I wasn't really aware that you had published multiple books, and your newest book is your memoir called Baby Making. So yeah, let's see that beautiful baby that you made there. Yes. Baby Making just came out recently this year. So congratulations on that. By the way, you look very beautiful and proud while you hold it.
Thank you.
So yeah, let's start off before we get into talking about your memoir and the story that you share in your book. Let's start off by you just letting our audience know a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
So I had a 42-year career as a psychotherapist, started in San Francisco. And then 10 years later, I moved to San Diego, California. And like you were saying, I'm a bioenergetic analyst. So it's a somatic form of therapy where we're working on the body and its expressions as well as the mind. And I've taught in that field and been an international trainer, which I am now. So that's been a lot of my career. I've worked with all different kind of populations. And then when I retired in 2017, I wrote a communication book for the public, because I found in therapy that many people, they want to connect, but they don't know how to say what they want to say, or they're not so good at listening, even though the intention is there. So anyway, I wrote a self-help book on communication called Communication Breakthrough in 2018. And then, yeah, so I've been writing and painting since I retired. So those are my two favorite kind of things. And then I wrote this little book called Tilt, Seeking Balance in Troubled Times. I wrote that during the pandemic. And I also did the cover. I worked all that year on learning how to do dark skies. And here's a woman going, you know, to a dark place, but there's a little bit of yellow. It's hard to see, but it's a little bit of light coming here and here. Anyway, and that cover got an award, so I was pleased with that. So,
congratulations. That's amazing. I'm going to give you a little clap for both the cover and the book. That's beautiful. And the metaphor of being on this boat and, you know, she's going to a dark place. It's like, looks kind of like an island or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of light coming through. You can see both in the sky and on the there and there. Little bit there. So anyway, but those are just, it's a chapbook with short stories that were part of my blog posts, and there's drawings I also did in the inside because I got to draw. So that's chalk on black paper is what these drawings are. Yeah. So those have been my two passions, writing and drawing and painting.
We're still in troubled times. So the book is still timely.
Yeah. Cause somebody, sometimes people just need, things are a little inspiring and short and quick to read. And so that's what that book is. And then, like you said before, we'll get into it. But then I've been working on the memoir for like 5 years. So that's kind of my background.
That's beautiful. So I know we're going to go on a bit of a journey in this conversation through your experience. So let's start with, what did you want this book to be for? Like, what's your intention with how this book can benefit the reader?
I have a big kind of passion about people deepening their understanding and compassion for themselves, each other, the neighbors, and the world. And like other people, there's some people and systems that I have trouble with. and there's some people and systems I'm drawn to. But whenever there's a block where there's a lack of understanding, then there's less compassion. And I think that adds to it, the kind of warring factions on, you know, small levels and families all the way to, you know, globally. So in telling this story, it was a way people get to walk the ground through what I experienced. But as they do that, even if they have different experiences, what's common is people suffer, people lose faith and hope, and then they find some way, they get help somewhere. And I wanted to write about the dynamics involved in going through a hard time and getting through it as a way to kind of support other people on their journeys.
That's so beautiful. Thank you for the way you described that. And, you know, I think that the title is so evocative, baby making. There's so much in our culture that's about trying not to make a baby. What happens when you make a baby when you weren't intending to make a baby? Who should be making babies and who shouldn't? And, you know, there's a lot of kind of like cultural messaging about parenthood. And obviously, you know, we need to continue our species, but there's so like biologically, that's a drive. But at the same time, you know, sex doesn't always equal reproduction. And so often when people have challenges with fertility, when they want to become parents, it's a seriously existential crisis for them, for us as humans. And I think, I guess what I want to say about it is people don't talk about this. It feels like this is really valuable to listeners who might be going through a journey of trying to conceive or dealing with infertility, as well as therapists who work with people in that space. You know, there are therapists who specialize in infertility or pregnancy loss, infant loss, adoption, you know, foster care, all of the elements of those experiences. But the most therapists will be working with people, whether we specialize in that or not, who've had some experience along that constellation. And I don't know if constellation is the right word for that part of it, but along that buffet of experiences, so to speak. And most of us don't really know that much about it if we haven't had specific training. Question would be, can you tell us more about what's in your book and about your story that you wanted to help people with?
I think you mentioned the few things. So maybe sometimes people see the title, they go baby making, go, whoa. So they're thinking sex. You know, but it looks like, what is this title? It's enough of a title, right? And then I tell
juicy.
Them it's about, but yeah, they go juicy. And then I go tell them about it's my about longing to have a child and then going through infertility and then baby loss and hospital experiences and some of the medical experiences, some of which were good and some of which were not that good in terms of how I was treated. And then still wanting to have a child and deciding to go through the adoption journey, which I expected to be simple after all the trouble I'd had. And it turned into be a really important place of learning that it's a whole nother thing that involves all these other people. And so getting to become a mother was, you know, this is the journey to that, which does end up, you know, with an adoption at the end and a happy ending in that way. But it's really kind of what all I went through and how the culture reacted.
Yes. Okay. So some of the things that you just mentioned are, and I'll say here that I am very sorry for your loss of your babies. Naturally, I'm aware that that is a very traumatic experience to go through, baby loss. So where would you like to start in what you want to share about your experience that you think could be helpful for the listener?
I think for the part, it's interesting. I'm thinking of men and women. Like, this is really interesting. I was actually invited to be on a book club that was all men. read my book and invited me on as a guest, you know, on Zoom as an author guest. And one of the men said, I would have never known what all the things a woman had to go through in her body had I not, you know, gone through the story of your infertility, your and the baby losses, because I had one, you know, earlier in the year, 1985, and then later in the year, same thing, got pregnant and had ectopic pregnancies that were life-threatening. And so lost two babies that way. And so that was one of the things is, so it's educational. And at this time when a lot of, in the power structure, men are making decisions about women and what they can and can't do with their body, that's one thing I like to say is try to, you can't walk in her steps as a male, but some men have really been, a couple of men, another person wrote a review about how much he learned and was touched by that. So that was meaningful to me to have an impact on men. And then the other thing is, to start with, is the effect of your identity as a woman. If you identify as a woman who may want children and can't have them. And so I have some scenes in there about feeling defeminized or my feminine identity being affected by my inability to make a baby with my own body. And if there's a contrast in here, 12 children, I was the fourth of 12. So, and she could do that easily, and is how I saw it. So I figured when it was my turn, it'd be easy. So my identity to myself as a woman, I went through that, and I think that affects women. So I wanted to touch on that and speak to that and, you know, connect with that, with women. So both men and women, in terms of the journey to infertility and loss, has been interesting to hear back.
Yeah. So often the infertility experience is, especially when pregnancy is involved, it is happening to the woman's body. And I can see that a male partner could feel not a part of that when they don't really hear about, or they don't understand, or they feel helpless to get to intervene, to do something, to fix.
As a partner, that's, we did some, I'm big on grief, just to say, I mean, that's the thing, but I really have a lot of respect for people taking the time they need and the place and the however they want to deal with grief. And so we were in a group called Infertile Friends. That was one group we were with for a while. And another one we went to once called The Empty Cradle. What a horrible name. And yet, boom, that's how everybody there had an empty cradle. They longed for a baby in that cradle. And they had a stillborn. They had a baby who died young. They couldn't have a baby. They were, you know, so, and I remember some of the men talking about how all they cared about was the health of their wife and being supportive and protective and doing what they can. And so when we left that meeting, there's a scene in the book where my husband just stops the car and we're driving home. It's a four-way stop. After that meeting of hearing all these people tell their infertility and loss stories, and he was kind of contained, you know, and then he was driving the car and he just put on the brakes. And he said, I was so worried about you that I realized that I never grieved the loss of my, these are his babies that died. So it was really touching because he just cried and cried. And whew, you know, we often in the culture don't allow men to be that vulnerable. And you know, so that's another place that was kind of valuable.
And that's, you know, that really kind of fits our cultural paradigm, that the whole thing, I mean, honestly, I remember my grandmother talking about her mother having multiple sets of twins who died at birth. And it was just like, it was really a casual story, like, oh yeah, my mother had multiple sets of twins that died at birth. It's like, oh my gosh. It's not, we've come a long way from the early 1900s when, you know, it wouldn't have been talked about in the family at all. Baby loss, infertility, you know, any problems related to birth, I think would be kind of like tangled in with sex as something that you just don't talk about. But these experiences are so visceral to us
and to our relationship, to our partners, there needs to be a place for it. And so I'm glad that your husband found the opportunity to allow his feelings to be expressed. So it is his loss too. And what you said about, he said, I was so worried about your life. Not to make this all about men, but there's so much trauma that can happen in reproductive situations that men are often just kind of like a frozen bystander for. And they aren't really brought into, you know, whatever is, if their partner is life, her life is at risk, or if the baby's life is at risk, you know, and they're just kind of lost in the shuffle. No one's really attending to them emotionally. And that feels really important, like for the well-being of the men in our culture too, to have that space, but also for these partner relationships. It's, you know, I hear so many stories of people who have infertility challenges that really impact their relationship from that moment on, you know, that there's not really the opportunity for a reparative healing experience together oftentimes. So I'm really glad that you speak about that and that you and your partner had the ability to do that.
If you don't have language, I think it was interesting hearing you talk about the past. And when people don't have a language and it's more suppressed in the culture, and it varies, I'm sure, in different parts of the world. But if there's not a language for it, then people tend to hold it to themselves more. But does it cause them any less suffering? And do they ever forget? Like when you were talking, I was remembering that my grandparents came from Spain. And they're buried right now in my hometown of Hollister, California. My grandmother and my grandfather's tombstones are there. And right in between them, they had a child who died at age 4, Tommy. And it just says Tommy and has a picture of him 4. It's like he's in between them. So how much they talked about that, I don't know. But there's something beautiful about this is always a part of you. So I think that's part of what I'm trying to support is for men, for women, you find a way to go through it, not hover above it and avoid it and keep going, because it'll always be the entity that you lost or the baby that died or that'll always be some connection with you. And there's a beautiful scene that I won't give away, where my mother, who I think won't understand me after I've had these baby losses, gives a speech about her own experience, and it's really powerful, and it blew me away. It's like, I don't even know her. So she talked about when we were young, she didn't talk, but as an adult, when I needed her, when I went through this, she talked about a finding a place in herself for those she lost. It's very beautiful.
I feel so much emotionally about what you're sharing. And it's funny because I don't have the personal experience of baby loss or infertility, but for one, I just feel compassion for what you're sharing and all the people I know and care about who've had similar experiences. But I think it's also like touching something for me in that my mom had a miscarriage before I was born. And I really know in my bones that there's almost like a shadow of that story. That's part of my story. You know, I don't know exactly what it is. I think it was when you said, I don't really know her at all. I was like, oh, it really resonated for me.
But it goes to the point, you're touched by that because she had a miscarriage and she carries, and it's part of what my mother talked about, having a miscarriage and you're carrying that and you get pregnant again. And that's still part of the next story, even if it's not spoken of. So that's what you're saying. The shadow.
I mean, I think I intuited that from just sitting here.
The shadow carries. And I think the more we can find a space to express the shadow or have a place for the shadow, I don't think you need to confide in your children everything. But when there's something unspoken and unknown, what happens? The individual goes to blaming themselves. And if mom was, let's just say, still grieving or had postpartum depression, they told me I had postpartum depression, even though I lost a baby at 6 weeks old. I go, geez, thank you. Geez, on top of loss and you have post, you know, so it that's going on in their mom's body. And then she has another child. My mother had the kind of the insight to be able to kind of connect all those and share that with me. So that was really, it was part of my healing.
Yeah, that's a real gift. And that just feels so true. And I think, you know, as a clinician, I think of this all the time. You know, we need to really think about this paradigm of talking about perinatal mental health. I know there, I'm not a specialist in that either. And I know the people who are, this may not be anything new for them, but, you know, the idea that what we look at as postpartum depression, is it not grief from the previous losses or traumatic births that happened that weren't really acknowledged as such? And then, you know, when the person next has a pregnancy and if they deliver a baby, you know, the just like we know, our body is carrying this, whether we are talking about it or aware of it or not. So this just feels really important to be speaking about these things out loud.
What we carry and what goes forth. And like you said, working with perinatal situations with mothers and new mothers is really an important thing. So I have a colleague who wrote a book about that, and it's really good. It's called Healing Mothers, Healing Babies. And her name is Leslie Costello. So anyway, she just wrote a beautiful book about that. She's a bioenergetic therapist, and that's a specialty of hers, Healing Mothers, Healing Babies. So it's
see if
working.
I can contact her. Thank you.
Yeah. As the mother, she's, as a therapist, she's working with these, with the mother. So yeah, what we carry and also hormonal changes and all that kind of thing that affects. So these are important. And what our biggest problem is often the identity we think we're supposed to have or how we're supposed to behave versus what's really going on inside one. And I hate myself. I love myself. I hate myself. I hate my baby. I love my baby. You know, the dynamics that need to be, there needs to be a setting for somebody to hear all of it and sit with all of it and be present for all of it so that you're supporting, in this case, what you're saying, the new mother as much as possible to be as present as she can, you know, in that role.
Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from clients' secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Yeah, and then the non-birthing partner as well. If, you know, what the birthing partner went through, the non-birthing partner went through too. And it's just often not acknowledged at all by them as well, because they don't know that they're allowed to have a feeling about it and, or how, like you said, what to do with it if they don't have the words to express it. So what happened for you spiritually through this experience of baby loss, nearly losing your life. I don't know if it was both times that you had the ectopic pregnancies. I know that they are life-threatening.
Right. And it's kind of like the second time, it's the first time I didn't know what was going on. You know, you can see the hospital the first time, and the second time it's like, this is familiar. I was in the middle of doing a therapy session the second time, and I felt my body felt like it did before. And what happens is when the baby starts to burst through the fallopian tube, because it was ectopic pregnancy, the doctor had said before, you'll start to fill up in blood, and your pelvic cavity, the blood will go up and you'll feel it in your shoulders. So this was like, okay. So this was like, yeah. So I knew, and I knocked on the door of my head. The therapy session was right over. So it was a new person. She left, but I know my face was wide. I knocked on the door of my colleague. I said, Jean, get me to the hospital right now. And, you know, so the second time, because I knew it was going on, it all moved more quickly. But yeah, because you can, you know, bleed to death. You're bleeding internally. Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I just went through.
That's horrifying to imagine being in a therapy session and having a hemorrhage internally. Yeah. I mean, like, oh my gosh.
See, what happened right there, Laura, was you asked me a question, and then I started to tell my story. I would like to bring this up with you because you're a trauma therapist. And what happened in my brain was I started to spiral into the bleeding thing. And the story, a part of me was worried about how do your listeners take that? Is that too hard to take? But also I was in it. And then when you're in that trauma vortex, which, by the way, if you want to talk about writing, if you're in a trauma vortex, you still have to keep thinking about the reader anyway. It's really hard to go deep, deep, deep and be vulnerable, but also be aware of the reader. And anyway, it's a big thing. So I just did that. I went into a little bit of a trauma spiral and forgot what the question was. So, and I give myself grace for that, because that's what we do. We go, for some reason, that's why we don't. You talked about how people for centuries don't talk about these things. Why? Because they got three other kids. They got to keep going. They got to get back on the field a day after a stillborn birth and go back out in the grapes, you know? So work the grapes or something. So people have to keep going. So that's why, because right, we can't, if we get stopped, we get freezing to the trauma vortex. Our fear is I won't be able to perform, you know, I won't be able to keep going. So we have to respect that. But I want to at least say it like you do on your program a lot with people, is what happened was I got lost there for a moment. Then I become aware of it. Then I come back to you and say, hey, I got lost. I don't remember the question because I went back into my trauma vortex.
Yeah. Thank you for naming that out loud. And you were talking about a life-threatening experience.
Right.
So
I went into my life threat, you know, my parasympathetic. Kind of freeze response there. And so I wasn't, you know, I couldn't come back out and still with my, you know, thinking calmer brain to meet you. So from there, I put my hand, you know, to my traumatized self and still had enough of a link to reach out and say, hey, I forgot the question.
Thank you. And I'll be happy to repeat the question. But first, I just want to ask, is there anything else you need before we proceed? Because we don't have to stomp any grapes right now. We're just here doing a podcast, just you and me. And we both know that we have plenty of time. Even though I gave a time to stop, there's plenty of time. I have more time.
No, I think I was thinking about my grandmother, because I guess she had five children who lived, but she lost five. And I remember something about my mother, her saying they were managing a vineyard, my grandparents. And my grandmother was also a midwife to other women. But anyway, that she had a baby. And, you know, then the next day she went out into the field, you know, took the baby with her, my mother, you know, picking grapes. I remember my mother saying, I was born out here in the vineyard. Anyway, so, but that must have also happened on a time when she lost a baby.
For sure.
She still had to go the next day to work in the field. So anyway, I just wanted to have that moment. But thank you for hearing it. I feel like
our ancestors have definitely joined us on Therapy Chat today. My grandmother, my mom, your mom, and your grandmother, and both grandparents have shown up. So welcome. Welcome.
Welcome. Yeah, that's nice.
We're honoring you all by talking about this like you couldn't back then.
Yes, lovely.
So what my question was, and I guess it does relate to what we both were just saying, is how you were impacted spiritually by going through these life-threatening experiences, which in addition to being life-threatening and not allowing the lives of your two babies to complete, to come to fruition. Now I lost my train of thought.
Spiritual, spiracy. Now, yeah. I'm not in that vortex anymore. It was like, what was the spiritual aspect, spiritual journey or something like that. Yeah. So, well,
what happened for you spiritually through these experiences?
I've always had kind of a strong spiritual base, kind of Christian, being raised that way. And I found a lot of comfort and support there. And then things that were controversial or even scandals later, like in the Catholic Church, that would bother me. And so I not so much this rule or this person, that person, but what I kind of refocus on is my personal relationship with God instead of, you know, all the rules over here. Not so much. It's like, what do I do to stay connected to God? So if I do something, if I go to church or if I give up sugar for Lent, it's not because heaven, hell, it's because at that moment when I'm tempted to do something and I don't do it, I'm reminded of kind of the gifts from God, the love of God, something like that. So like right before they took me away the first time, when my tubal pregnancy and I was shivering and I go, you know, they're putting me on gurneys and I'm cold and I go, they're going to save me my life or not. I don't know. But at this moment, I just took a breath and thanked God for my life and for the 3 years I had been married to my husband, Steve. And so, because I thought that the only power I have is to sink into the moment. So thank you, God, for this life in case this is the end for me. And then, so my spiritual, when I was really kind of pulling my hair out, why can't I get what I want the way I want? I was mad at God. So I went on a spiritual retreat for like a week, just in silence. And so if I could kind of have room to kind of have the presence of God. So I kind of go through a spiritual experience on there. And then later I did a grief retreat, which is also kind of God oriented. So my spirituality, I was telling you really, I don't like proselytizing. I don't like pushing any kind of certain faith on anybody. But what I do honor is, for me personally, having connection with God as I understand them, for me, has been a balm, a comfort, and something, you know, bigger than me that I'm supposed to like sometimes be, you know, really lost and really, really receptive when I really have no answers. And then that's a time when I'm the most receptive and the most richness comes from my experience of God. So that's my spiritual journey in there.
Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, there's something that you said about, and this is where I lost my train of thought before it. You said this thing about wanting what you wanted when you wanted it. And so there was the physical crisis that you went through and the longing to become a mother. And then there's also this sort of like, I'm trying to get what I want and I'm a very driven person. And I'm used to, if I go after what I want, I get it. And which I can relate to that. And how, when you are seeking something and you expect to be able to do it and you can't, there's like this, for me, it feels like kind of banging your head up against the wall. And then there's a time where you kind of have to surrender to, I can't do this by myself. I'm trying as hard as I can, but it's not happening, you know? And it feels like somehow, I'm not a spiritual teacher or anything, but it feels like in my experience that those moments are more significant to our spiritual development. I'm not talking about religion for everyone who's listening. I'm talking about the spirituality and the idea of there's greater than just this, you know, experience of human life of trying to achieve and produce, and you know, there's something bigger going on here.
Like in Chinese medicine, they have a circle, and there's nine aspects of the self, and one of them is spirit. So some people, that's very big and important. And some people, it's a little smaller, or, you know, might be this small, but everybody has that aspect. And people yeah. have other aspects, like you were saying, you know, work and will and family and relationships and whatever else. But it's an aspect of the self. And I agree with you. It's like when I'm the most lost in it, none of those other things are going to help. So whatever spirit is, whether it's that bird that just flew by that, you know, or that butterfly that reminds you of your sister that died or whatever, you know, something happens at spirit that you feel like you're being given to. And you're being loved, and then something can move from that. So however you think about it, it doesn't matter, like you say, what the religion is. I think everybody has some aspect if they allow that receptivity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of, I think what I'm trying to relate here is the idea that there's like a desired identity as woman. Feminine means certain things. And wanting to become a mother and not being able to, it really brings up not being able to conceive naturally, brings up these identity questions. Well, who am I if I can't be what I can, my concept of what a woman is, and trying to force something to be the way you want it to be, you know, whatever the identity is, if it's a professional goal or whatever. Those moments, if it's like, why is this happening to me? Why can't I get what I want? You know, why can't I make this happen? It's not fair. It's not, you know, I should have this thing I want. And, you know, and it's not wrong to want this. It's normal. It's okay. But sometimes it just doesn't work like that. And so, like, how did you grapple with that in that through those retreats that you did? And how did you find your way back to some kind of meaning that you could live with that made sense for you?
I cried a lot. You know, like one retreat I went on, like St. Francis Retreat House in San Juan Bautista, California, one of my favorite places. And I just stayed in that room and just cried. And I just walked among the hills where the cows were because it's very rural. I'd just stared at the cows and the birds. And cried. So I was just really in this passive receptive. Cause like opposite of what you were saying about, I'm driven. And you go, hey, you're not going to get what you want the way you wanted it. And boom. So being able to allow myself to be kind of flattened by it. And then from the dearth, from the death, from the burnt out land, and then lying on the burnt out land. And sinking into the burnt out land with my burnt, you know, ness, and allowing some kind of little seed to grow from there, because I gave up and gave in and allowed in a receptive way. I was open to something green coming up. And so that to me was that. I would say that too about, you were saying something about femininity. So your own, I mean, everybody's different, you know, and there's just much a really respect for anywhere from feminine to masculine to non-binary to fluid. So everybody has their own thing. So just to say, as it was my thing, it was like, I now feel not as feminine as my mother and my sisters were able to give birth. And so that was something to always know in my heart, though, that I also, when your body gets cut up a lot, that's another thing. That affected my identity, you know, like my pelvis. Like I have a thing, like I have never having anybody cut on me for any reason because I went through enough of that, you know. So, you know, there's some kind of things about, but having your body, the integrity of your body cut open a couple of times, that affected me too. So to be able to reclaim. So I did a lot of healing things like pelvic work and breathing into my pelvis and working bioenergetically with, you know, my colleagues and therapists to kind of reclaim. But, you know, all you have to do is touch that part of the body, you know, the pelvis and, you know, the pain or the sorrow or the trauma is held in the body. So I did a lot of trauma work and to release what's held there, but always knowing that there's a scar, literally and figuratively, there's always a scar I have to kind of learn to not love it is not right, but embrace that as this is who I am. And from that, I am still a woman in my own way. And the most important way, kind of being a loving wife and having a nice husband, but also being able to be a mother and these days to be a grandmother. So my life is really rich and full.
Yes. So thank you so much for sharing this. And I know that people who are listening, if this is sparking curiosity, I think the book is going obviously much more in depth into all these things that we're talking about. But, you know, before we started recording, you named in a way something, I think I wrote down what you said, so I'm going to see what, if I can find the words. It was something about, I guess I didn't write it down, but you were talking about something that you implicitly mentioned when we were just talking, when you talked about being down on that burned ground. It feels like an important metaphor for everything that's going on, even outside of talking about fertility, infertility, conception, adoption, but everything that's going on, like these cycles of like birth and death and rebirth. And when it feels like what's happening is just too much to bear and we want to go away from that, it's like going into it and kind of through it is how something else happens, how something different is created. Like you said, a seed was planted. And it feels like that's a theme that you'll be going into in more depth in the book too. Am I right?
You know,
in
the book,
a long, long winding road.
It's a long and winding
road. Bum, bum,
that leads to your door. And what door opens if it leads you to the door, right? I mean, we're all getting all metaphoric here. But, you know, the book is memoir, so it's not like my other little books that have a little more philosophical stuff or the communication book. So it's kind of the story and how I experienced it. And so it's kind of for the reader, if they're able to join me there on the grass or wherever, then, you know, kind of what can they see from it? And I guess I got a thought when you were talking there is when we lie on the ground and we feel hopeless and, you know, there's a lot of difficult things happening in the world right now and you feel hopeless. And then what do you do is kind of there. It's you think that you need to hold on to something. And what is it that you hold on to? So for me, it might be faith. For somebody, it literally is their garden. For somebody else, it's a relationship or somebody they can complain to. But if we get stuck and, you know, to me, underneath that, there's always some kind of shame. We're not going to go into all that, but shame, guilt, what did I do? How did I cause myself to be here? That's the most deadly thing. And, you know, if we believe, if there's any spiritual thing and God loves you, or it's forget God and you don't even believe in God, but there has to be somewhere a self-love, because if you're on this planet, you are meant to be here for something. And so what is it if you allow yourself to sit long enough and don't avoid it? And it can be scary at times. It's what is it? And it'll come to you. I'm supposed to go help so-and-so, or I'm supposed to talk to, even though it's scary, so-and-so, because I know they're going through something similar, you know, or I need to go back to my AA meetings or something, you know, there's something that'll come back to you about humble, you usually humbling, but it also comes from self-love. You know, what is the most loving? I know if I love myself, what can I do that's the most loving thing when I'm in the most despair? So that's important to me, that it's not that if you sink into the ground and you go, oh, you know, I think I'll just stay here forever. That's usually probably not what's meant to be. What's meant to be is stay there long enough till the light, you know, till this tiny little spot of yellow appears way, you could barely see it. But it's reflected here and it finally appears on the light, and then it makes her want to keep, even though she's really tired, she's going to keep her oar going toward that. Visual effects.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this on in audio format, you might want to go on to the YouTube version so you can see the visuals that been showed to illustrate. I mean, this feels like a really rich, multi-layered conversation. And we're talking about your book and your memoir, but just feels so, it's about that and it's about much more than that. So I have loved talking with you.
You always take us. You always take us. That's one thing I like about you. I give a shout out to Laura and her therapy podcast, Trauma Therapy Podcast, because you always, from your heart, pull from people rich places to go that I think are really a resource for others. So I want to thank you.
Thank you. That means so much to me, especially coming from you, someone I really look up to. So I really, really love talking to you every time we get to talk. And I'm like, why has it been so long? We have to do this again soon. But
sure.
For now, thank you so much for coming on to Therapy Chat and sharing about your beautiful book, Baby, and your meaningful, powerful story of what you went through and how you ended up where you are in motherhood and grandmotherhood. So it's very beautiful. I love when you mention grandmotherhood. I'm near the age of beginning to think about that now. And it's like, oh, what a delightful idea. My baby's babies? Oh my gosh. But for now, I just really want to thank you for being my guest on Therapy Chat again today, Ben.
Thank you. I loved it.
Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.